Hello, and welcome to Conversations with Lee Fulkerson, a series of podcasts from Plant Pure Nation. I'm Lee Fulkerson, and my guest today is Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. Dr. Esselstyn is an American physician, author, and former Olympic rowing champion. A top surgeon at the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Esselstyn is the author of Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, in which he demonstrated that a low-fat, whole foods, plant-based diet can both prevent and reverse coronary artery disease. The diet has numerous clinically proven results and has been advocated by former U.S. President Bill Clinton. Welcome aboard, Dr. Esselstyn.
Good afternoon, Lee. Great to be with you.
Terrific. First question, how did your background as an Olympic rowing champion influence your approach to medicine?
Well, that's interesting. I've never thought about this a great deal, but I think since the Olympic experience occurred really when I was just had finished college and I was in my first year of medical school, I certainly didn't view it as some people I think view their Olympic experience as the ultimate goal in their life. Actually, I looked at the Olympic experience, and fortunately for us, the success that we had as being just a lesson in life, if you will, that if you really put your mind to it, and despite the odds that people may present with you or for you, you can actually overcome those odds and keep it going. So the motto of our crew was always press on regardless. And once I got into some of this research that I'm in now that can be at times a little controversial, there were some times when it was important to think back to our motto of press on regardless of what the others are saying.
Well, yeah, you certainly have done that, and we're all fortunate that you have. I think your Olympic experience really served you well. When and why did you begin to research the causes of heart disease?
Well, after I became a surgeon, and I finished my tour in Vietnam, I was offered an invitation to join the staff of the Cleveland Clinic. And I thought that was really quite exciting. This was 1969. Mm-hmm. And eventually I became chairman of the Breast Cancer Task Force. And it was that experience that really got me sort of interested in nutrition, because by the late 1970s, early 80s, I became increasingly disillusioned with the fact that for no matter how many women I was doing breast surgery, I was doing absolutely nothing for the next unsuspecting victim. And this kind of led me to a bit of global research. And it was quite striking to see that there were other nations where breast cancer was rates were 30 or 40 times less frequent than the United States, for instance, like Kenya. Mm-hmm. And then in rural Japan in the 1950s, breast cancer was very infrequently identified. And yet as soon as the Japanese women would migrate to the United States, by the second and third generation, still pure Japanese American, they now had the same rate of breast cancer as their Caucasian counterparts. So this was all pretty compelling stuff. And perhaps even more so was the incidence of prostate cancer in Japan. In 1958, in the entire nation of Japan, how many autopsy-proven deaths were there from cancer of the prostate? 18 in the entire nation. Now, that was probably the most mind-boggling public health figure I think I'd ever encountered. By 1978, 20 years later, they were up to 137. Which still pales in comparison to the 28,000 who will die of prostate cancer in the United States this year. Well, somehow, along about this time, I got concerned that my that my bones would long be dust before I might get the answers between cancer and heart disease. So I think, though, in hindsight, maybe that's not true. But nevertheless, it looked to me like we could get more bang for the buck if we looked at the leading killer of women and men in Western civilization, which was cardiovascular disease. And so in this review, it was so apparent that there were multiple cultures where cardiovascular disease was virtually non-existent. And the common denominator was they were all thriving on whole food, plant-based nutrition without oil. And so the dream became this. If we could convince people to eat to save their heart, they would also save themselves perhaps from these common Western cancers of breast, prostate, colon, and perhaps pancreatic.
Tell us a little about your original clinical research project and what's the result.
Well, you mean the first one with heart disease?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it just seemed to me that the only way to really get a foothold in this whole arena or get a reputation or begin to build a footing, you have to really do research. You can't just go out there and talk about hype and snake oil. That's just not going to sell it. You've got to do the research. And so I decided that it was it wasn't that quick or that easy, because I felt that if we were going to have patients eat plant-based, that lo and behold, I had to do it myself for at least a year, because I was sort of a cholesterol holic. I'd grown up on an Aberdeen Angus beef farm and a dairy farm, all, you know, just totally wedded to the idea of dairy and animal protein. And so I knew for the longest time, for a year or two, that I was going to do this research, but I didn't quite know when I was going to start, because I had to do it myself first. So if you look at Dr. Prochaska from Rhode Island, he pretty well defined how we change lifestyle or behavior. This is in regards to his experience with people who were smoking. But you go through these phases of pre-contemplation, contemplation, action, and maintenance. And I was probably wobbling somewhere between contemplation and action when finally I was with my wife at a surgical meeting in New Haven, Connecticut in 1984. And I can remember so clearly the papers at this conference were about as dull as you can imagine, and the weather was horrible. But they always have a banquet after these conferences, and at the banquet, this waitress put a plate in front of me with roast beef on it, and the roast beef was so huge, it was draped over the sides. And I somehow, at that point, looked at my wife, and she said, "You're not going to have that, are you?" I said, "No." She said, "Well, then I think I'll have it." Well, so that was the last time I had a piece of meat or chicken. And it was interesting that, sadly, Ann's mother, when she was 52, had died of breast cancer. And 2 weeks after that meeting in New Haven, Ann's sister came down with breast cancer. And Ann turned to me and then and said, "I am with you." So in April of 1984, we started eating plant-based. And by the next summer of 1985, I went to the department chairman of cardiology at his agreeing to my request to ask his department to see if they would send me 24 patients who were significant coronary artery vascular disease, and I was going to try to see if I could get them to eat plant-based nutrition. So over the next year and a half, I had these 24 patients, which was the largest number that I could monitor and at the same time carry out my surgical responsibility. And the thing that most frightened me or concerned me was the fact that there might not be patient compliance, because I was really asking these
There you go.
My concern for this study was, look, I was not a trained psychologist, and the rock upon which I was afraid this study most likely might flounder would be lack of patient compliance. So the mantra that I used for these patients was the same one that I was using for my cancer patients that I had learned years ago from a wonderful West Coast surgeon by the name of Bert Dunphy. And Bert had said that patients with cancer are not afraid to suffer, and patients with cancer are not afraid to die. But patients with cancer are afraid of being abandoned by their physician or by their family. So for the first 5 years, I saw every one of these patients every 2 weeks in the office when we would draw their blood for checking their cholesterol, check their weight, their blood pressure, and I would go over every morsel they ate. Now, at the end of 5 years, I became courageous, and we stretched it out to monthly. Once a month, I saw them. And by the end of a decade, they were now pretty well on autopilot. So I then was able to stretch it out to seeing them quarterly. But it was very exciting because there was quite a bit of bonding between the group, because we would maybe every 3 or 4 months we'd have a meeting of the group, and they would share recipes and comment about the study. And it was very exciting to see what was happening, because not only were they halting progress of their disease, we could stop it, but we often were able to identify striking examples of disease reversal. And this is the kind of study that can be very unsettling to the status quo.
Those are incredible results, and I'm sure, that must have been the first time in modern medical history, anyway, that somebody had actually accomplished reversals of coronary artery disease. I mean, that was...
Well, my friend Dean Ornish, when I had started the study in 1985, I had never even heard of Dean Ornish. And 1986, I'd never heard of him. But in 1987, one of my patients, at the time of visit, came in with a Discover magazine. And here was a story on Dean Ornish, who was really doing the same thing on the West Coast. But to his credit, several years before that, even when he was a medical student, Dean had actually had some people in a hotel and found out that with lifestyle mindfulness changes that he was able to improve their PET scans on perfusion.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a great respect for Dean's thinking along these lines, but it was just kind of interesting that without even knowing of it, that these ideas on the West Coast or the Midwest sort of spontaneously came into being.
Speaking of, confluences or interesting coincidences, it seemed the research of Dr. Colin Campbell was also becoming known in roughly that time. When and how did you come to know Dr. Campbell, first of all?
Well, I guess that I was so passionate about what our results were that by 1991, I said, "This is crazy. Why isn't the whole world learning about this?" So, of all things, as a general surgeon, I put together what I thought would be a marvelous national conference on the elimination and prevention of coronary artery disease. That's kind of a bold title for a general surgeon in heart disease. But we got a wonderful faculty. We had people from Harvard. We had Jerry Berenson, who was a great pioneer who did all the early studies in Bogalusa on showing coronary disease, how early it occurs in young people. Ernst Winder was there from the American Health Foundation. William Castelli was there from the world-famous Framingham study. And Alexander Leaf from Harvard. And I had asked Dean Ornish to come, and he came. And it was interesting that just about the time I was forming the faculty for this conference that was to be held in Tucson, I ran across in the New York Times an article that talked about the Grand Prix of all nutrition studies, and it was none other than the Cornell China study that headed up by T. Colin Campbell. Well, I had no idea. I'd never met the man, but I saw this article in the paper, and I said, well, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I'll just give him a call. Well, he couldn't have been nicer, and he was absolutely delight, and he came to Tucson as a very meaningful and important part of that faculty, and that was in 1991. And ever since then, Colin and I have maintained our close relationship and friendship to this day. So that was kind of the background of this conference, and it was really very exciting to hear these experts pretty much agree on this. But my gosh, how do you get this to really have momentum? And it always comes back to doing the science. So by this time, Dean Ornish had his study out that was published in The Lancet. By 1995, we published our first results in the Journal of Family Practice, and that was how it all got started.
So why are the combination of your clinical results along with Dr. Campbell's lab research such a potent combination, do you think?
Well, I think that the fun about being with Colin is his lab research has been focused on cancer, where he pretty well in the mouse model that he had, where he created these clusters of liver cancer by using alpha toxin. Mm. It was really quite striking when he would administer over 5% of the diet of casein, which is the major protein in all dairy. He was able to turn this cancer on and have it grow very aggressively. Then he would take away the casein and it would shrink. Then he would reintroduce it and it would explode again. Then he would take it away and it would shrink again. I mean, here was Colin literally turning on and off cancer with food, with animal protein, dairy protein.
Amazing. The results of his science are incredible. I heard him say once that the combination was that he was doing it in the lab and getting these really interesting scientific results, you know, theoretical in laboratories. But you had clinical research on people, and the combination of those two together provided a synergy that was greater than either of them on their own.
Well, it was really great fun, because not only is Colin is such a courageous physician and absolutely fearless in terms of speaking his mind, despite what the usually lined up forces against us are, namely in industry or sometimes even academia.
Yeah.
And because when you're a threat to the status quo, it's not many people really adore change. The only person who really loves change is the newborn infant, who loves change whenever necessary. But the excitement for us was, I suppose, in 1986, when we suddenly had the very, very first patient. This was a patient who not only had horrific heart disease, but he had disease in his femoral artery and his thigh. So he had a lot of what we call angina of the calf muscle, which is the term we use as claudication. So he could walk, he had to stop five times crossing the skyway to my office because of severe pain in his calf. So he'd stop, and then the calf would fill up with blood, and he could walk another 25, 50 yards. Well, I was so focused on his on his heart, I totally forgot about his leg. And it was about 11 months after he'd been on the program, one day at his office meeting with me, he said, you know, when I started that 11 months ago, when I first was crossing the skyway, I used to stop five times. He said, you know, the last month it got to be four times, and it was three times, and it was two times, and it was once. He said, I don't stop anymore. I don't have the pain anymore. So we went back to the vascular lab where when I first saw him, I did a pulse volume at his right ankle, and it was very modest. Well, we repeated the pulse volume, and now, within that 11-month period, it was double now that his pain was gone. So we had absolutely rock-solid science that food and food alone could absolutely not only halt, but could reverse this disease. And it was really exciting because people were going to say, well, what about the statin drugs? What role did they play? Well, let's be absolutely certain about this. In 1986, there were no statin drugs. He wasn't on anything like that medication. Yeah.
So since then, have others attempted to duplicate your work? And
oh, sure. No, we've had, oh, gosh. Now that we've had something like 150 healthcare workers and physicians rotate through at my request or my invitation, they come as my guest every time I conduct the intensive counseling seminar, which I still run at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. And, oh, yeah, we've had any number of physicians. They, the ones that I really like are the ones that decide to do it a little bit more along the lines that we find are most effective. Namely, right now, what almost is a guarantee of failure of this system is if a physician comes, understands it, gets it, but doesn't change his practice format. That is to say, he sees a patient maybe every 12 to 15 minutes. And at the end of that 15 minutes, the last 3 minutes, you're going to ask the patient to change the way they're eating. Yeah. You are blowing smoke. Yeah, that's a total dream. Because if you're going to get somebody to change their lifestyle, because next to religion and sex, there is nothing as personal as food. And people simply are not going to do this unless you really give them the entire background. So what we found is that so many of our patients are coming from outside the state of Ohio that there was no way that they could stay for days at a time in Cleveland. And therefore, about 20 years ago, we started we modified the program into a single intensive 5.5-hour counseling seminar. And at that seminar, patients with cardiovascular disease are going to learn exactly what they have done to create their disease in the first place and precisely how it is that they can become empowered as the locus of control to halt and reverse this disease. Because I always start out making it absolutely clear to them that, look, coronary artery disease or cardiovascular disease is nothing more than a toothless paper tiger that need never, ever exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. This is a completely benign foodborne illness. So we give them respect. And the only way that I know to give a patient respect is to give them our time. So it's 5.5 hours. They learn what they did to create the disease. They learn how they're going to be empowered to be the ones who can stop it. In addition, they all get a hefty notebook that has in it a copy of every one of the PowerPoints that I used during the seminar, plus several of our scientific articles, and they receive a 44-page handout with many additional recipes that add to the 240, which are in the two books that we provide them. Then there's an hour and a quarter presentation from a wonderful woman who has had 30 years experience acquiring and preparing plant-based foods, dealing with reading and ingredients, travel and restaurants, and then everybody receives a DVD of the entire seminar that I filmed from an earlier one, so that if they get home and get forgetful, they can flip this on and get themselves back up to speed. And then we always have three, and this is so important, we always have three local or regional participants who've had a previous successful experience share their story with those who are in attendance so that those who are there can say to themselves, listen, if he or she can do this, I can do this. Then we answer all questions, have a delightful plant-based luncheon, and then stay in touch as necessary through email or phone call.
And you've had tremendous success. You did You recently published the results of your dietary treatment of over 200 other patients since your original research. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. The original research was kind of exciting because I don't know if you recall, but remember the of those original 24, and within 2 or 3 months, I recognized that there were 6 nice guys, but they just didn't get it, and I had no money for that original research. So I relinquished them back to their expert cardiologist with the understanding I would peek in from time to time to see how they were doing. But it was interesting that the 18 who remained with us, we wanted to know how many cardiovascular events they had had in the 8 years prior to coming into our program before they, while they were in the hands of expert cardiologists. And they, those 18 had 49 coronary events of worsening disease in those 8 years prior to coming to our program. Once in our program, 17 of those 18 had no further events. Well, there was one little sheep who, after 6 years, wandered from the flock, got into the French fries, got into the lamb chops, the glazed donuts, more pain, had his bypass. Now he's back with the flock, but proves the point that I'm trying to make with you today. Now, those other, that was our initial study. It was quite exciting, and we had wonderful angiographic evidence of disease reversal in some patients. Then we come to the one on 200 that we published in July of 2014. Two were lost to follow-up. That left us with 198 patients, followed for close to 3.75 years. Now, of those 198 patients, 177, 89.3%, almost 90% were adherent to what they had learned at our seminar. And this was a group that were quite sick with heart disease. 119 of those 177 had already had a bypass or had had a stent, which pretty well describes the severity of their illness. There were another 44 out of those 177 who had already had a heart attack. And it was exciting to see how they did. And when we looked them up, we found that 99.4% had had no further major cardiac events, namely heart attack, stroke, or death. There was one patient in his trip to China. He misbehaved, I guess, a little bit, got into the local economy, ate all those foods with salts, had a small stroke. But the other 99.4% had no further events. And it was very exciting for us to see how powerful this can be.
That's amazing. So do you believe plant-based nutrition is gaining greater acceptance among the public? And
I don't think there's any question, Lee. If you compare where we stood back in 1985 with where we are in 2016, oh, my God, it's light years difference. But we still have a huge way to go. For instance, right now, I happen to be a member asked to be a member of the Nutrition Committee of the American College of Cardiology. And a survey was done recently of cardiologists who have been out in practice a while. And more recently, there's one that's being done now of those who are in their training. And there's no question that they are grievously agreed that they are so lacking in any understanding or knowledge about nutrition. They never get it in medical school. They never get it in their cardiology training. And here it is, the answer to the disease, because I am so delighted to think that the American College of Cardiology is going to be able to slowly make this effectively known. Because, you know, when you think about it, there's been a basic covenant of trust between the caregiver and the patient since the days of Hippocrates, that whenever possible, the caregiver will share with the patient what is the causation of the illness. And sadly today, that's just simply not being done in cardiology, because when you think about it, it's incredible to imagine that in both in Europe and the United States, we have taken a disease around which we have built an absolute enormous empire of a health care industry for a disease that doesn't even exist in half of the planet.
Yeah, that's really incredible and shameful, I think.
Well, there are two economists in Chicago who in 1999 in the Chicago University Press, Topel and Murphy, who indicated that if we could get rid of heart disease, we would save the nation $40 trillion. What would that do for our national debt?
Not to mention the general health of the public. It seems to me the idea is gaining greater acceptance among the public, which is a good thing. What factors do you think have contributed to that greater acceptance?
Well, I think what you and Brian Wendell and your mellifluous tones, Lee, did a great deal to spur this more than anything I can think of was with your movie Forks Over Knives.
Well, I can't thank you enough for that, but you were a big part of the success of that film. I got to tell you, your participation in it and was critical to the whole thing's success. And the story that we were able to tell, particularly the interweaving of your journey towards your understanding of the coronary artery disease and the causes thereof, and Dr. Campbell's parallel journey are amazing. You guys were born very close together. You were raised in similar environments. He was raised on a dairy farm. You were raised on a beef and dairy farm. And, grew up with those traditional ideas about diet and so forth. And then through your own efforts, you came to a different conclusions and then joined together and to help create something even greater. So it was really a pleasure and an honor working with you. So I thank you. It's nice to see that Forks has had.
Oh, it's been huge. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people who, God, I couldn't, if it was for a while there, I couldn't get on a train or walk in a crowd without somebody coming up to me and saying that they'd seen the film.
Oh, that's great. And it's still doing well. You know, I check it every once in a while. It sells well on Amazon, but it's really, what's nice to see is the comments that are sent in by viewers mm-hmm. on Amazon. And there's so many of them that says, well, it changed my life, or everybody should see this film. And it's really, you know, helped me or some, a loved one to become free from the fear or the grip of these terrible chronic conditions like heart disease or type 2 diabetes or various other things.
Well, I think you bring up an excellent point in that as we sort of live with this, that is, as we get to rub elbows more and more with other healthcare workers and physicians who have a similar interest, you suddenly realize, and I don't think I really, I was so focused originally on heart disease, I wasn't perhaps as fully appreciative of the other benefits that have emerged, because truly right now, we are about on what I think is the cusp of what can truly be a seismic revolution in health in this country and in Western civilization. And that seismic revolution will never come about through another pill or a procedure like stents or an operation. This seismic revolution is going to come about when we in the profession have the will and the grit and the determination to share with the public what is the lifestyle, and most specifically, what is the nutritional literacy that will empower them to absolutely annihilate 75 to 80% of chronic illness, because it doesn't just work for heart disease. It absolutely can you eliminate strokes, senile dementia, hypertension, diabetes, obesity. Now that's just a start, but think of it.
This, right, no.
There are no exorbitant costs at all. You've got to eat. And the exciting thing is the only side effects are you get rid of some of the thing that men most mention is the side effect they have is they get rid of their erectile dysfunction. Now that alone ought to take care of half the population.
You'd think it would.
But
would
you also think it isn't just obesity and hypertension and diabetes and strokes and dementia. It's also, believe it or not, inflammatory bowel disease like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, even multiple sclerosis, allergies, asthma, renal impairment. I mean, it just is so wildly impressive. And there has never before in the history of medicine had a tool in our toolbox that is so powerful. Because what really is the uphill battle right now is to have people increasingly recognize there's nothing you can do that will absolutely worsen your health more than to eat animal products, whether it's dairy or whether it's meat. I'd like to throw in oil there, but we certainly don't want people to eat oil because of all the other problems with it.
Yeah. So where do you see this idea about a plant-based nutrition standing like in the next 10 to 15 years?
Well, it has to get – there are multiple things that will really make this crescendo. One, doctors will begin to get it. And it's interesting how if sometime every – cardiologist finally understands the power of this, then if suddenly the cardiology community gets this, then all their patients begin, and of course the patients begin to share with their friends and neighbors who aren't seeing the cardiologist. So the dream is that through cardiology that word will come out when somebody says, if you don't ever want to get vascular disease, you start eating plant-based. However, along the way, all these other things will begin to emerge as well. Because when the gastroenterologists recognize that they don't have to send their patients with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis to surgery, when the rheumatologists who are struggling with these horrible medications for rheumatoid arthritis mm-hmm. and suddenly cure their patients who and their illness through nutrition, it's just going to mean everything. But the entire practice of medicine will have to change from this ridiculous parading through of 20 or 25 patients a day through a 15-minute visit where all you do is bow to the gods of Pharmageddon and change their drugs, which is almost an embarrassing and despicable way to practice medicine.
So do you think that we've reached the tipping point in terms of the general adoption of plant-based nutrition in America?
The tipping point of what?
The tipping point of the adoption of the plant-based nutrition.
Well, I think it is going to, because if we suddenly can get the schools. I mean, this could be over in a heartbeat if we could get whole food plant-based nutrition into schools. But right now, the government through the USDA is such a roadblock because everybody on the USDA formerly was a leader in the food industry, whether it was the Cattlemen's Association, the Pork Board, the Egg Board, the Dairy Association, and then that kind of resistance, and they forcefully would protect those industries and keep feeding this to school children. But if we can crack that open, the kids themselves, especially if we start teaching this in schools, mm-hmm. I mean, if in the simplest of science terms in the second, third, and fourth grade, show these kids the benefits of whole food plant-based nutrition and why these illnesses don't have to exist, I mean, that can be so incredibly powerful, not only for their own well-being, but it's amazing how kids can often teach their parents.
Yeah.
So once we get this really going in the schools, we're in good shape. And also, of course, it's... We've got to get it in hospitals. Can you imagine patients going through open heart surgery and their first meal is bacon and eggs?
that's pretty pretty ironic.
When you think about it, right now, what is the one specialty that keeps all these hospitals afloat? Cardiology. I mean, we talk about the fact that this nation is being pulled into debtor's prison faster than anything you can imagine through the entitlements, okay? So Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. What is 45% of Medicare? Cardiology. And what is cardiology today? It is the non-treatment of the causation of illness. It's your first stent, second stent, third stent, then a bypass, and then suddenly nothing further you can do, congestive heart failure, and then you die. Die of what? A completely benign foodborne illness that never had its causation treated.
Wow. Powerful. I can only hope that things are going to change. I really think things are changing, and it's because of people like you that they are. So I thank you for your efforts. I thank you for your cooperation, your friendship. It's been great knowing you, and I really admire and respect you incredibly highly.
Lee, it's always fun, and listen, stay in touch. Don't be just hiding yourself below the Mason-Dixon line.
Okay.
Hang around, and I'll hang on.
Okay, thanks.